Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle with my friend and associate Alfonso Rachel, and this is the Virtue Signal, and you probably know the drill by now. Zoe, we have a growing crisis on our southern border. It's been going on for quite a long time now. I don't want to talk about the specifics of that because that's not really what we do on this show, but I do want to talk about kind of the underlying ethical issues. So let's talk about this idea of sanctuary. Sanctuary is an ancient idea, certainly in the Christian church throughout most of the Middle Ages. If you managed to get to a church and request sanctuary, they could not enter the church to get you. And certainly the expressed motive for so many people coming to America illegally is that they're seeking sanctuary. And it's a very important idea. Now, the problem, of course, is the church is of limited size, and you can't put the entire population of a country into a church because the king is rampaging around and doing all kinds of nasty things. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the kind of the morality and the ethics of this issue. We're not the only country in the world with open borders, but I think we're the only country in the world that people want to go to that have open borders. And it's been made clear by the progressives and the Democrats especially that we have essentially a moral obligation to allow anybody into the country that wants to get here. And that doesn't just apply to people on the border. If there is no such thing as U.S. citizenship, and they're trying to destroy that entire idea, they're trying to let illegal aliens who are not U.S. citizens vote and so on and so on. And we know all the political reasons for that. I'm not interested in that right now. The question is, what is our moral obligation? If you were to take the contrary case, you would say, well, nobody stopped my ancestors from coming here, and I suppose your ancestors probably didn't have much choice. But with all that said, do we have an obligation to allow anybody who can get to this country to come and live here?
No.
Why?
The short answer is, well, and this kind of reminds me of I've asked this question for a long time, man, because we see these images of people being like, you know, whipped, you know, with horse reins and stuff like that. And, you know,
which is
being,
false, by the way,
false.
It's just absolutely nonsense. It's a reins of a horse. And yeah.
Yes. You know, and, you know, somehow this is likened to the Planet of the Apes. And I wouldn't mind speaking to, like, you know, the racist implications of all these things. But being that that's the case, I've asked this question for a long time. If this is a place where you're just going to have to endure such bigotry and racism and being whipped by Border Patrol and all that sort of stuff, why the crap would you want to come here? You know, but, as it is, yes, anybody could come to America. And I say it before, I say it again, man, America is not a place where it's like we're better than anybody else, man. We are everybody else. But
right.
if you want to have like this place, preserve this place, man, where, you know, it is club super fantastic, there's certain protocols that you got to follow, man. You just can't come in. Maybe that's easy for us to say, being that we were born here and stuff like that. It's like, look, man, I get it. You know, we had the luck, the fortune and the luxury of being born here. A lot of times, even in the end, that doesn't amount to anything because you've got people who were born here who don't really appreciate being here.
Now, that's a big contrast, isn't it? The people who are most screaming to allow every single person in the world into America, the ones who talk about this being the worst place in the world and why would anybody want to live here?
Yes, and they don't seem to want to leave.
I noticed that.
You know, so even when we have now, like with the Haitians, you know, and to anybody, man, my heart goes out to these people. They're trying to get to these people. There's things that they're trying to get away from, you know, whether it be natural disasters or whether it just be tyranny and stuff like that. I understand, man, and my heart goes out to these people. The problem, and where it seems like the people don't understand and they mistake our being practical for callousness, is like, look, be careful that you don't come here and make this place just like the place that you just left.
That's my exact argument. My entire argument about this, my first argument anyway, is that, look, if people come here because they're escaping either economic lawlessness or political lawlessness or both, and if the first thing you do when you come to this country to come to a place where the rule of law exists is to break the law, we got a problem right there.
Yes, indeed.
You are bringing with you the very qualities that you're running away from, and turning us into the place you're trying to get away from.
Yes. And now these, the biblical principle of this is, and now when you have, you know, the Pope going out there saying things like, well, we're supposed to be building bridges, not building walls. It's like, sir, I don't think you've read the Bible at all.
Yeah, and I've seen Vatican City, by the way.
Yeah.
And that's a walled community and not a city community. And you don't get to just walk in and sleep on the Pope's couch.
Exactly. The Lord himself says, look, if you try to enter my sheep pen, are there any other protocols besides by me? I'm the gate. You try to climb. He's like, these are the language that he uses. You try to climb over the walls or anything like that, I'm going to call you a criminal. Right. You just can't come in any old way. And I think as far as the progressives go, one of the books of the Bible that they really hate is Leviticus. But even Leviticus will tell you, I want you to love the foreigner as your native born. Wait a minute. What? Wait a minute. I thought Leviticus was like this bigoted book that just talks about stoning people and all that sort. But here it is. God saying, I want you to love the foreigner as your native born. Now, but here's the thing about that, though. You want sanctuary in the city of Israel. Okay, well, Israel is supposed to love you as their native born. Here's the thing. You can't love someone as your native born unless they assimilate to the law of the native born. That's how that works. You can't just come in and you're a foreigner. You want to do whatever you want. Oh, that's fine. You just go ahead and do you. You just go ahead and do your precious little self. No, you have to come in and you have to adopt the laws of the native born. So giving sanctuary in America, yes, if you go through the right channels, and I understand, man, it's difficult. And there's a lot of people who put a lot of red tape and difficulty in making these to happen. And there's reason for that. You know, we can see all the engineering that it takes to make a voter stock for these things and to be able to implement the system that they want. We can see it. We just got to be able to sell it. That's the thing. We can, you know, we see the picture, man. We see the wizard behind the curtain, man. We see all that sort of stuff. We just got to be able to sell the truth of it.
Yeah, for 13 years now, I've been doing public speaking events and talking about this. And the first argument I make is the argument about you're bringing lawlessness with you. Mm-hmm. But I think the more powerful argument is every time we allow a legal immigrant across the border and basically just say, well, you got here, you know, welcome home. Mm. What we're really doing is we're spitting in the face of the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, probably millions, mm-hmm. of people who are trying to get here legally, and they are going to enormous hardship to do it. They're waiting in line for years, sometimes decades. They're taking all the money they have and sometimes all the money they can borrow in order to go through the process of coming here legally. And to simply say to them, no, you chumps, you wanted to get to the United States, should have gone to Mexico. It's a piece of cake. For 13 years, I've been talking about this, and for the last five, I've been having to deal with it practically. I'm married to an American immigrant, and it took a long time and a significant amount of money to do the legal paperwork to get her the green card. And now we're in the process of getting her U.S. citizenship, and she'll do that, and she will be a good citizen because she understands this country and is willing to go to the trouble to do all these things. When you have a person like my wife, who's applying for citizenship and first comes, you know, legal resident alien. What the immigration services are, they're not even so much looking for something as they are looking against something. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's crystal clear is, you know, you not only can you not come in if you have an established criminal record, but you can't come to this country and then be provisional for a green card and find yourself arrested five times for petty larceny or whatever. You know, you have to show the government of the United States, which at least theoretically represents the people of the United States, that you're the kind of person that you could allow in your house without them walking out with the spoons.
Yes, yes. And, you know, so wanting to come to America, and I just think that, you know, liberals, they seem just so contrary on this. And like, say, for instance, they love to lean on what's that poem? Bring us your tired, you're hungry, yeah. And you're poor. And they're very inconsistent with their narrative as far as that goes. I mean, as you said, you know, when we talk about the walls around Vatican City, heck, the walls around their own house.
Oh,
it's
boy.
Like, are you guys going to let them pass through the golden door of your meadows and stuff like that?
No, they're not.
You're not going to do that. Or even as far as like, I think one of the richest, or for lack of a better word, or stark, I should say, contradictions and shows of hypocrisy that they have is when it comes to abortion. It's like, okay, so you say, bring us your tired, your hungry, and your poor. Meanwhile, that's the same argument that you guys use to abort kids, which is in effect profiling. You think that because this kid is going to be born poor, that is justification to kill them. You don't feel that they have the right to pass from this small border into free air breathing territory. That's a justification to kill them.
You want to talk about lifting your lamp behind beside the golden door, boy. And that's the golden door, all right.
Right. Now talk about killing with extreme prejudice. You know, so now, but in this case, it's like, oh, we're just supposed to just open our borders as far as this goes. And, you know, so to allow sanctuary and, you know, being a place, because they do try to, you know, call Christians hypocrites as far as this goes. And aren't you supposed to open your doors to these people? Why aren't you doing this and why aren't you doing that? It's like, look, the Lord never, in his great sacrifice that the Lord has made, he never told us to sacrifice common sense. He never told us to sacrifice these things. There are protocols to be able to do this sort of stuff, to be able to be that shining city on the hill. You can't just, I mean, even as far as heaven goes, heaven, definitely has a border. And the Lord's like, look, you're crossing into my kingdom over my dead body.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. You got a border. You got to, I mean, it's, I know it's a cartoon image, but you got a gate there and you got a gatekeeper and he's got a book.
Yes.
And he's checking your ID.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly. So if you want to have this place that you preserve, you know, there are channels that you have to go through. And that's not being mean. You want to talk about, really, it's the exact opposite. It's compassion. It's out of compassion. Unfortunately, all they see is callousness. But if you want to be able to preserve this to be a place that people all over the world, they have an idea, if they're not conditioned to just flat out hate America, they have an idea that there's this place that they can come and they can thrive and they can live these dreams. Well, let's preserve this place for that. And to come here, America is supposed to be a place where it's fundamental to be resourceful and to be able to be free to have a moral execution of your resourcefulness and stuff like that. Well, it's the same thing when people are going to come here. Hey, we want you to be in the club like that. Do you have the resources? Do you know how to tap into the resources to
what
be able
you
to
contribute?
Here? What can you contribute to be
right.
here?
That's right.
Yeah, to maintain.
This country works because people, I hate having, the worst thing about living in the age that I live in is that I have to qualify everything I say now and everything I believe with. It used to be, but the idea of America is that everybody pulls their weight here and that's why the country's successful. What can you do? And so on. You know, when people talk about the poem on the base of the Statue of Liberty about, you know, send me your huddled masses yearning to be breathe free. Mm. It does say that, but it doesn't say send me only your huddled masses, your wretched refuse of your shores. You know, it doesn't say only them. And we've since the Immigration Reform Act, I want to say it was in the 70s or 80s, basically engineered by Democrats. If you look at immigration from a decade per decade sample, going back a long, long way, you find out right up until this time, I forget what year it was, but basically in the 60s, the top 10 immigration companies, let me rephrase that, in the 60s, the top 10 countries that we were taking people from were all developed countries, you know, Germany, Canada, England, and so on. Now, last time I checked, not one of the top 10 is a developed Western country. Every single one of them is a third world country. And this has been, as everything else, has been used to take advantage of our compassion and our decency and our and all of that in order to change the demographics of this country to people who are being selected specifically because they really don't seem to be able to contribute much to this economy. Therefore, they're dependent on the government. Therefore, they will vote for the people who promise them the most stuff. Therefore, they'll vote for Democrats. And when people say to me things like, well, easy for you to say, you know, you're here, you're inside the sanctuary. You don't have any right to keep people out. Nobody kept your ancestors out. Yes and no. I can produce, because I have it on my computer, I can produce the signature of my grandfather on an immigration form in 1915 in Ellis Island. I can show I didn't have to enter the country and my dad didn't either, but my grandfather did. And my grandfather had to come, he didn't grandfather didn't walk across the river from Mexico. My grandfather had to come into this country, had to sign, he had to show that he had some sort of skill, he had to show that he wasn't carrying diseases and all the rest of this stuff. He had to go through the process. My mom was a legal alien her entire life, naturalized. She wasn't a citizen, actually. She remained a British subject her entire life, but she had her green card from 1971, paid taxes, all of that. So I don't really want to hear it, you know? It's true that I didn't have to go through that, but it's not true that I am here as a result of people just deciding to come here. Both of my parents and virtually everybody else who's a citizen of this country came here legally. And this is the issue. The issue is constantly made out that conservatives hate immigrants. We're all immigrants. I have more respect for new immigrants than I have for any other American. People who came here legally, who did the work and the money and are here because they want another chance, I think those people are more American, certainly more American than these left-wing professors and these Antifa thugs, you know? I'd cheerfully switch one for one with those guys. We could ship out as many of those people as we bring in. We'd be in a much better shape than we are now.
Yes.
But all of this to say is that I'm tired of being told that we're hypocrites. We're not. We're not talking about not providing people sanctuary, but there is a procedure, and that procedure has been in place for pretty much the entire history of this country. And to say that now we have to give that up alone in the entire world is kind of nuts. If I, with all of my privilege, my wealth and white privilege and all the rest of it, if I decided I wanted to go live in Australia or Norway, let's say, both of which are very nice places, I don't get to just move there. You know, I don't get to just get on a plane, pack my bags and buy a house. I have to be approved. I have to go through a process. Why are we the only country in the world that seems to think that, no, whatever. You know, the idea of citizenship doesn't even exist as far as the progressives are concerned.
Yeah, and it's funny, we're seen as this arrogant country and highfalutin and snooty. Meanwhile, we have people coming in that are dictating to what we have to do. As if that's not arrogant. You're going to have to,
that's right. We're going to move into your house, and then we're going to tell you how to run your house, and we're going to tell you what we want for dinner and what you've been serving to your family for the, now we don't like that, no more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who do we think we are?
Right. You're going to educate us for free. You're going to give us free healthcare. You're going to give us, these social services. You're going to assimilate to our language, press one, press two, press three for whatever language. And it's like, wow, and we're the arrogant ones? I think that's kind of funny. Now, do you think it's kind of strange that, How the Haitians got targeted for deportation? We're going to put you on a plane and we're going to send you back. How were they so effective at targeting the Haitians for that? Meanwhile, they're calling the Border Patrol agent
racist.
Was there footage,
by the way? It's kind of funny, isn't it? How one particular, it must be the French accent, so that's got to be what it is. It's visible from helicopters. They fly over the border with helicopters and they can hear the French speaking coming up. And they say, oh, those people down there happen to be a little bit darker than the rest of the people trying to get in. We're going to specifically send them back, which brings me to another issue. It used to be, up until relatively recently, that the illegal immigration coming in from the Mexican border was primarily Mexicans. And let me just say this, not because I need to put out any bona fides or anything, because it needs to be said. I came to Los Angeles in 1988, and it was in 1988 when I first had my exposure to Mexicans who were here, legally working Mexicans, and I have never met people who worked so hard, who had such great family values, and who were so genuinely friendly ever in my life, ever. And you want to talk about working hard, I've never seen the like of it. But those are legal immigrants. There's problems we have with these gangs. My point of all this is simply this. It used to be that the immigration from Mexico, the illegal immigration from Mexico, was Mexicans coming to America to look for work. Now, it's almost exclusively people from other nations, people from South America. Now it's Haitians. Haitians want to get into America, so they go to Mexico, and then they go to the border of Mexico and the U.S., and they come to the U.S. And my point of all this is, what does that make Mexico? I mean, if you're really talking about sanctuary, then isn't the fact that you got to Mexico sanctuary? If you're really claiming that Haiti or whatever is unmanageable, well, you made it to Mexico. Congratulations. Aren't we basically just kind of shopping for better real estate now? I remember when this one of these convoys was coming up, this thousands and thousands of immigrants coming from the south of Mexico. And the Mexican government basically said to these thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people, we will provide you, Mexico, we'll provide you with sanctuary. You can stay here. Nope, not interested. No, we're looking for a little tonier, a little higher, a little more upscale neighborhood. And what responsibility does Mexico have in this? I mean, when we had a president who cared about America because that was his job, forget about his, his emotional and sentimental inclinations. Mm. When we had a president who thought his job was to protect America, he put pressure on Mexico and basically said, look, guys, they're not coming in on parachutes, they're not coming in from the Atlantic Ocean. They're coming in from your country, and you control that border on your end. What are you doing about it?
Indeed, man. And it's and you want to talk about like resourceful. It's like, wow, if you got the resources to be able to get to Mexico, even to get to Mexico and then try to, come up to through the United States. It's like, wow, man, how come you guys don't put them resources together and like fix your own country? Now, like the Mexicans.
Now we're on to the main vein.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, OK, between, and I've said this for a long time. Hey, Mexicans, you guys work fast. You work effectively. You work inexpensively. Why can't y'all fix your country? And it's the same thing with Haiti, man. Their soil is so rich, man. You can grow hair in it. It's fertile land. I mean, I've watched kids, man. I've watched little kids pop a balloon and use it three more times. They could take a bus, man, and ride that bus until the wheels fall off, and they'll still scoot that thing down the road at 70 miles an hour. These people can build and rebuild. They're resourceful people, but somehow they're being inhibited from doing what they're doing.
It's corruption. It's the same thing with Mexico.
Same thing.
It's bad.
That's why they
politics.
Bypass Mexico. That's why they buy. It's like, look, man, we don't want to be.
That's right.
They're principally a lot of their principles are the same. The same thing with the Catholic upbringing. Haiti's predominantly Catholic. Mostly voodoo. The highest structured, I think, in Haiti is a voodoo temple, but on pretty much on every corner is a Catholic church. But it's the same. It's like, no, man, we want something else. We want to be here, in America. And I think one of the reasons why they're being targeted for deportation is Haitians tend to actually, despite, I guess, their heathen religion, they tend to be more conservative. They like Republicans in Haiti.
All immigrants are conservative.
Yeah.
I grew up in Miami. I got there in 1971, and the Cuban immigrants were the most conservative people I met because they'd actually lived under socialism. And by the way, since we're on this subject of Haitian immigration, I would certainly like to ask some of these college professors and the rest of these liberal politicians that if you are from Haiti and that is the climate you're used to, and you're going to go all the way to Mexico to get to the United States, why don't you just go to Cuba? Just go to Cuba? Cuba's got universal health care and it's got an extremely high literacy rate. Just ask Michael Moore. If Cuba is the socialist paradise and it's a loving, compassionate paradise, unlike this capitalist fascist death camp that we have here in America. If you're a Haitian immigrant, why not just go to Cuba?
Yeah.
You get all the socialism. Why not go there?
Right.
Well, part of it is because Cuba's dirt poor. And it's dirt poor because Fidel Castro kept his country dirt poor because of his ideology. And when Fidel Castro died, he had $800 million in his personal bank account. He's a servant of the people. And I also suspect that if you show up on the shores of Cuba, you don't get handed a lunchbox and all the rest of it. I suspect the reception you get there is going to be a little more severe.
Yeah, a little bit different. And you know what? Maybe just thinking out to left field a little bit. I wonder if they're being targeted for deportation. You got to get them Haitians out of here because they might know a little something more than we want the people to know about Hillary. And the Clinton, it's like,
yeah.
Hillary might be telling Joe Biden, can you get rid of them, please?
Haiti's not a good story. Haiti is the I heard something that's almost unbelievable, but and this is 10-year-old information, I think. But somebody, I believe I read that Haiti's gross domestic product in 2010 is lower than it was in 1860. And that basically the situation is so bad there politically that the only way to accumulate wealth is to steal it from other people. There's no new wealth created. It's just accumulation. So to wrap this idea up about sanctuary, And the hypocrisy aspect of the rich and famous, we'll just take that as read. From a point of view of a person with actual compassion, like you and me and like virtually every other conservative we know, we feel a strong sense of empathy with these people, and I hate to be Bill Clinton about this, but we feel their pain. We can sympathize with them. We can say, if I was in their situation, you know, what would I do? But one of the other issues that comes into play here is the lifeboat issue, right? If this is a place that works and most of the other places don't, then this is a lifeboat of security. This is a place of lawfulness and economic opportunity and personal freedoms and rights and all the rest. And everybody wants to be here. Well, we can't let everybody be here. If you put a $100 bill or a green card on a table anywhere in the world, anybody who could read would take the U.S. green card, right? It is the most valuable thing there is on the planet. And there are billions and billions of people who would be here tomorrow if they could be. Now, when a ship goes down and there are a few lifeboats and lots of people in the water, the people in the water will do anything to get on that lifeboat. And I have enormous sympathy for that, and I have enormous compassion for that. But what happens in a case like this is the people on board the lifeboat eventually have to start smacking them with oars, because if they don't, that lifeboat, which is already overloaded, is going to capsize, and then everybody dies.
Yeah.
Everybody dies. And this is the ethical issue that I wrestle with all the time with this immigration issue. You know, it is exceedingly difficult to come to grips with that. But one of the most powerful things you said on this show, and I've never forgotten it, is we live on planet Earth. You know, we don't live in this ideal world. We live in a world of reality, and we live in a world where so many countries are so badly run, and our country is so spectacularly successful, that we really are in that situation where we simply cannot accept, we cannot accept 8 billion people into this country. It's just not possible, and we don't have an obligation to do it. So if we have to go to this lifeboat model, then that's what we have to do. But ultimately, I think what you said really is the point. The things that make America the kind of place people want to come to, the kind of place people risk their lives to come to, are not closely guarded secrets, you know? The Constitution is not kept in a vault 500 feet below the surface of the earth and protected in darkness and steel so that no one can read it. Mm. You can, in fact, read the Constitution anywhere you want to. All of these principles that work for us work for anybody if they're employed. And this kind of, to me, is my kind of emotional armor against the sight of people who are struggling to get out of that water and get into the lifeboat. Comes a point when you have to say, look, you have to be able to build your own. You have to be able to build a ship that doesn't sink all the damn time.
Yes. Yes. Put them. And now, of course, that comes to the point of one person's morality versus another person's morality. What makes you entitled to be in the boat and not me? How come you have the right to be there and not me? You know, how is your life more valuable than mine? You know, so when it gets into that struggle of what a person feels, they're trying to survive, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not my
life. I respect that, and yes. I understand it.
You know, in that situation, when you're trying to survive, when that survival instinct kicks in, it tends to have an override over any moral implications. That's when you're just driven by instinct rather than by rationality. It can get really ugly. And, you know, these are things that, you know, we try to understand. And, you know, we tried to make it a system. And unfortunately, people, they live by their fears and they try to institute their fears. And it keeps us from being a system that can be more accommodating to people. A system that does filter out people that will want to come here. Because unfortunately, there are people who do come here and they want to bring the ideas of the place that they were trying to get away from. They have this prejudice about a system that we have and stuff like that. And this kind of stuff, you know, even if these people do come here, they start getting inundated with ideas of what America is, and they feel like they got to get caught up with trying to change it. Like, you know, like this narrative, this BS narrative of, you know, this person, you know, beating on this person, and, mm-hmm. and whoever reported it is trying to say that it's like the Planet of the Apes. It's like
they weren't even there. They saw a Getty image. They weren't even there.
But here's the thing: why would you invoke that? What is it about liberals that every time they hear this primate, they associate it with black people and then project it onto other people, trying to accuse them and say, it's like, you guys are the ones who think that everybody evolved from monkeys anyway. This is your narrative, but somehow it's racist and you make it something that you attach to black people. And
yeah, that's a really great point.
And then when you see like some strap waved around, all of a sudden, all you see is a whip because there's black people around, as if whips are only associated with black people. Nobody else in human history has ever been whipped before, but you want to tie that to black people. So these are the things that are pushed out. So even when the immigrants come here, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, a lot of times they get stirred up in this insecurity as well. So this is something that they keep pushing, and it makes it difficult for us to be this country that is, I mean, because, hey, despite the fact, and this is where we have to be consistent with our arguments as well, you know, you got liberals who are saying that this place is overpopulated. The whole world is overpopulated, but we got room to take in people illegally. Now, there's a lot of free space in America. Sure, if these populated cities would spread out, sure, there'd be a lot.
Absolutely, absolutely. If we could just randomly disperse immigrants around the country, we wouldn't have things like MI-13 or whatever that gang is. Those only exist because they kept a tiny, tiny concentration of their own social identity with them and have not assimilated.
Yes, you know, but at the same time, there is going to have to be like a sense of, you know, responsible oversight to not to invade other people's privacy or anything like that, but we got to make sure that, hey, we know who we're living amongst. That way we can protect our freedoms, not being given over to a sense of security or safety or anything like that, but it's just common sense. So it's like, look, you want to come in, you want to go ahead and get your own piece of territory and stuff like that, that's fine. But unfortunately, we've been made to where we can't even do that because these policies are put in place that they make it to where we can't trust each other while trying to force us to trust each other. It's like, look, man, that stuff don't work.
Yeah, I have two final thoughts about this because I think the lifeboat analogy is really excellent in terms of the morality of it and the philosophy of the whole thing. The first one is the right to self-defense, right? Everybody has a right to defend themselves. If people coming on this boat are going to cost me my life, I have as much of a right to try to keep them off as they have a moral right to try to get on. I have a right to defend myself and my life. So there's that aspect. But while you were talking, I just realized something that I just thought was actually kind of profound. Let's go to the lifeboat analogy with the Titanic, right? Why do I have the moral right to be able to say, no, we get to decide who comes on board this thing? And I realized, I'm not talking about America now, I'm talking about the West. The reason that we have the moral authority to do this, and the reason that the West is the place that everybody wants to live in, is because when the Titanic went down, it wasn't the strongest beating up the weakest and getting into the lifeboats. When the Titanic went down, hundreds, probably thousands of men stood there voluntarily and said, women and children first. They voluntarily went to their deaths in order to preserve this idea of what the West is. They died for civilization. They could have beaten up those women. They could have knocked those children senseless, could have jumped in those lifeboats. It's what happens when you see like other cruise liners go down. The first people off the ship are the crew. But that's not what the West is about. And that willingness to go down to your death in icy water so that women and children can survive, that is the ethical and moral foundation that allows us to be able to say this. In other words, what we're saying is you are claiming that you have a right to be here because you're in frozen water and you've got a right to club anybody to get on that lifeboat. And what I'm saying is the reason you want to get on this lifeboat is because people like us voluntarily don't do that. We don't club children and women in a mad dash for the strongest to survive. I find that to be a compelling, really compelling argument. Indeed. that the reason that we have a right to defend the lifeboat is because so many of us are willing to not get on it in the first place. And if you come to this country with that attitude, if you come to America legally and you're willing to basically say women and children first, then you're welcome here. But if your entire argument is, well, I want to be on that boat and I'm going to do whatever I have to take to get on it, then you are doing something that the people who are on the boat and not on the boat for they voluntarily put aside that option because that's what civilization is. And that's what you want. You want civilization, but you don't want to be civilized about getting to it.
Yes, yes. And, you know, and that's something that's our nation is built on, having that kind of value, this Western value. And that's coming from the Lord himself. The Lord himself says, look, husbands, love your wives. Be willing to lay down your life for your wives. Love your wife as I have loved the church. So it's like that kind of value right there, that's something that is special, you know, to build on. You know, the way that the Lord values the kids. It's like, look, if you're a stumbling block to children, it is better for you to have a millstone tied around your neck and be cast into the sea. The Lord's kind of militant about this. You know, so it's like this value that we have, yes, women and children first. This represents me. You know, so, you know, to have those kind of values, that's a unique thing in the world, you know, to see each other in that image and where you're going to place this value, not some sort of a self-righteous move or anything like that. But it's an example of, this is how we show the value. This is what a man does.
Yeah. Which is why I had so much more sympathy for the people coming over from Cuba on rafts with their grandmother, their children, the whole family there. When I looked at what happened in Europe 4 or 5 years ago, I see nothing but, you know, combat-aged males, 22-year-old males, nothing but them. Where are your families? Where are your children? Where are your mothers and fathers? Where are your women? Well, you left them back there because you're strong enough to get here and they're not. And that's not the kind of person we really think that we need over here on the lifeat side.
Which if I may, which brings sure. me to that part where it's being played up. This guy was beating this or trying to whip or whichever. This guy said, this is why your country is crap. You know, is this how you treat your women? We didn't get footage of that. It just kind of cuts to this guy cursing this guy for saying your country sucks and this is how you treat your women. What was that guy doing that they didn't want to show? You know, what was he? Is it because just like you said, how come we see these able-bodied men coming over and where's the women? You know, these people who are fighting age and stuff like that. And where is the value showed towards the women? And because there isn't this respect, not just so much the respect of women, but the self-respect of knowing that you're stronger and we do have dominion. But with our dominion, we're not supposed to be domineering. With our dominion, we're supposed to be protectors and providers. That's what we're supposed to do. And where's your show of that? And maybe if there was more of a show of that, there'd be a better place for you to live where you are. And we're seeing that America's collapsing also because there isn't that value. We see this, the objectification that we see of the women, the self-objection, objectification of the women, and men feeling like they're entitled to be women. Where is the self-respect and where is the respect for women without being overcome by being effeminate? You know, these things we were warned about, and these things will be a collapse of not just the country, but a collapse of our integrity in mind, body, and soul. So I just, all that to say, it's like, I see where that guy is coming from. It's like, look, man, what are you doing? This how you treat your women? That's why your country doesn't have any stability.
Yep. It's interesting, isn't it, how we're always accused of being like the social Darwinists while we're here and they're not. It's survival of the fittest. When in point of fact, the people that are doing most of the fighting to get into this country are the people who are the most ruthless and the most willing to abandon, you know, any sense of obligations and just claw their way in. That'll do it for this edition of the Virtue Signal. It's made possible by the members here at BillWhittle.com, small group of people who do an awful lot of heavy lifting. And if you want to join them, we'd love to have you. You can go to BillWhittle.com and click on the Become a Member button or make a one-time donation if that's something you'd rather do. Every little bit helps because these lights require electricity and those bills have to be paid. For Alfonso Rachel, I'm Bill Whittle. We'll see you next time here on the Virtue Signal.